I don't get the opportunity to introduce our guest speaker. Our guest speaker is actually quite a unique individual. I've been friends with him for over 20 years. He's intelligent, articulate. He's got a wicked sense of humor, of which I've been the recipient of many times over the years. He's always told me, Bruce, he says, whatever you say up here, remember, I'm going to get up to the microphone after you are, so be very careful in terms of doing that. When I talked to him earlier today, a couple of things, he reminded me that if the Jets had kept losing and actually were forced to go to a Game 7 against the Minnesota Wild, that game would have been in Winnipeg tonight. So perhaps divine providence came in the way and works out for the best. He also mentioned today he was working on his remarks, and I guess I've got good news and bad news. The good news is that he's, as we know, an excellent speaker, and we're all looking forward to hearing his remarks tonight. The bad news was he said that his remarks are going to be a little bit longer than what his sermons normally are. I mean, those of us that come here, I mean, when the services run past 12 noon, it's not because we're singing extra choruses of Jesus Loves Me. It's because the sermon has, well, anyway. Most of us know Michael Wilson fairly well. He's been a minister at Charles United Church for 24 years this summer. He grew up in Winnipeg and attended high school just down the street at Grant Park. After studies in science at the University of Manitoba, Michael went to study theology at Emmanuel College at the University of Toronto, and later he earned a Doctor of Minister degree from the Chicago Theological Seminary. Michael's first church was a three-point charge of Bertel Isabella Mineota in western Manitoba, the real metropolis. And my friend over there, Norm, knows that one well because he was there as well. He thoroughly enjoyed being a young rural minister and can often be heard still telling stories of the people and events of those 5 years. His time at Charles United has been rich and rewarding, working with a multitude of people and seeing an entire generation grow up well here. Michael has taught at the University of Winnipeg Faculty of Theology, been a former president of the Conference of Manitoba and Northwestern Ontario, and has been awarded the Queen's Diamond Jubilee Medal for Community Service in 2012, an honor he got to share with actually one of his friends, and you can ask him who his friend is. Highlights at Charles Wood have included the $2 million expansion of this church, which is where we're sitting right now, the development of the church's reputation for creative music and worship, and the publication of his book, A Guided Tour of the Bible in 25 Stops. Michael and Maureen have three adult children, Aiden, Benjamin, and Leah, and take great pleasure in books, movies, theater, and sports of all kind. He is currently the assistant coach of the women's basketball team at Canadian Mennonite University, as well as an avid dog walker. What do you know? You never know. Please help me welcome Michael Wilson.
Bruce was being too modest. He and I both know that it was a great honor in 2012, just down here at the gates, when he and I received the Queen's Diamond Jubilee Medal at the same event. So, got to share that special moment with Bruce and acknowledge all the work that he does in the community. I feel really rewarded tonight because in years to come, when I tell people that I was a minister, and the question will come up, were you any good? I'll be able to say, I'm not just saying I was a good minister, but one night, the Dirty Catfish Brass Band opened for me. How good is that? And here's my one joke of the evening for millennials, if there's any in the room. Zach Galifianakis, okay, is a comedian who has a series of videos on YouTube called Between Two Ferns. And in Between Two Ferns, Zach is the epitome of a stupid speaker. And I guess that's what I've been set up as tonight. In November 2008, construction on the addition to the church and the completion of this room took place, and we began to have some conversations about, well, now that we have all this space and everything looks so new and clean, I wonder what else we might do in our ministry. A number of ideas came forth and conversations were held. And among a few of us, we started to talk about, what about something for men's ministry? Now, at the time, there had been a long history of ministries for women in this congregation, and an annual retreat was something, women's retreat was something that continued to go on. We tossed ideas around, and eventually we said, why don't we have a dinner? Why don't we have a men's dinner? And when it first began, I was of the mind that male spirituality would be a topic that would be addressed every time we got together for the men's dinner. Now, the speakers in the first 2 years were United Church ministers, and they touched on a variety of associated topics. But some speakers, when we went outside the church to ask to come and speak to us, were a little hesitant about addressing a subject like male spirituality. I remember quite clearly one of the early speakers we went to responded in an email saying, I don't know anything about male spirituality. I'm not an expert on that subject. And so I stopped using the phrase, actually, and invited speakers to come and talk about the intersection of life and work and meaning. And while speakers over the last 10 years have for the most part simply told something of their own personal stories, many of the stories we have heard were wise and useful and meaningful things about male spirituality and other. We have heard the perspectives of a professional athlete and a practicing Muslim in Obi Khan, and a very practicing and committed Jew coming from broadcasting in Matthew Leibel. We heard from public figures like David Northcott and Larry Updike and Devon Clunas. 1 year we heard the unique perspective of an Aboriginal Anglican, Chief Ron Evans. All in all, it has been very rich and varied. And as the 10th anniversary approached, I began to think about that original impulse, that phrase I stopped using 8 years ago when approaching people, and wondered if this could be an event that was not only enjoyable, but something that furthered our growth as men of faith. And I have been wanting to say some things about the times in which we are currently living. And I'm a little afraid to say them on Sunday mornings in a mixed audience. And so I approached the planners and I thought, would it be ridiculous to suggest that I might have an opportunity? The question I would like to address is this. What is male spirituality in the Me Too era? So I want to begin by defending something that a lot of people make fun of. I want to say in a very clear and obvious way that I believe there is great value in the way men choose to gather together. For the last 20 years or more, somewhere between September and March, when my schedule allows, I can be found in the gymnasium of Tekvok High School, playing basketball with a bunch of other guys, most of whom played in the high schools of Winnipeg School Division No. 1 in the late 70s and the early 80s. We are, in general, a lot slower, a little wider, and our game is much more vertical than horizontal. But as a gathering of men, it works for us. I am comfortable there. I escape other things playing at Tekvok on Tuesday nights. For the last couple of years, it has also provided me a unique and awesome experience, as I now have two adult sons who play basketball, and we ought not be playing on a team in a league together. And it's nice just to be shooting hoops in the backyard. But on Tuesday nights, when Benjamin and Aiden come along with me, I find myself doing the thing that I love the most with two of the people I love the most. Now, I could spend Tuesday evenings in a book club or a prayer group or a support team. Often, when I can't make it to TechVoc on Tuesday nights, I'm here at a church meeting, and that's okay. I work at the best church in the world. But at basketball on Tuesday nights, I can swear. And nobody gets offended. If I were to swear at a church committee meeting, you know what would lead to? Another church committee meeting. If two guys get at each other, we shake it off, and when we come into the gym the next week, all is forgotten. Two people at a church committee get at each other, we are talking about it for years and years and years. If I make a mistake while playing basketball, an air ball, a missed pass, a blown defensive assignment, I just shout out, "My bad!" And all is forgiven. Next time you're at home and you really mess up with your spouse or your family, just shout out, "My bad!" and see if it goes away just like that. Sometimes I think the way men choose to gather together are undervalued, that they are not as deep or as meaningful as the way women may choose to gather together. But book clubs and spa days and baby showers are not superior, and neither are they inherently good or bad. They are just what they are. And the way men gather together, whether it's at basketball or card night or going to a hockey game or golfing or hunting or fishing or darts at the pub or in service clubs or curling, can be valuable and meaningful experiences. They are what they are, right? But here's the thing. The masculine ways of gathering, and I say masculine, not male, because women may be a part of masculine ways of gathering, and feminine ways of gathering, and I say feminine, not female, because it's all right if men are part of those gatherings too, are not necessarily nor automatically, even when they are at their best, spiritually enriching. I love getting together with my two oldest friends in the world, people who did not simply know me when I was younger, people who knew me when I was shorter. And we go out every month or two and have a beer and maybe watch a game and talk about family and work and about life. And it's great. It is awesome. I wouldn't trade it for anything. I hope you have friends like that. But that, good as it may be, doesn't take care of my spiritual needs. Male spirituality is not just friendship, though friendship is good. And it's not just exercise, though exercise is good. And it's not just the company of men, though the company of men is good. It's not just getting away, though getting away is good. And it certainly isn't any of these things when people use their gender-specific gatherings for excessive drinking or misogynistic talk or the expression of hatred, or the righteous self-control of resources in overly well-appointed man caves. Hanging out with men is not male spirituality by default. Do you see where I'm going with this? The way men gather can be good, very, very good. Male spirituality, we are talking about something different and something deeper. So what is it? What is male spirituality, and how should we understand it, and how should we understand it in the present day? And why should we be speaking about it now in the Me Too era when men are being asked quite rightly to listen like we never have before? And the truth of it is, male spirituality is a rather new phenomenon, or at least a very fairly new phrase. It hasn't been much of an issue for most of our history. As long as the church was at the center of society and men were at the center of church life, then there wasn't really any need to kind of tease out a specific understanding of male spirituality. It wasn't the type of language my father ever used. He came from a different time, a time when men made sure that their families went to church and that they were at the wheel of the car as they went, right? A time when men, and to be honest, white men in particular, were legendary figures in church and society. This isn't for the millennials. You're going to have to turn to grandfathers in the table, and they'll explain what I'm about to say next. People like Tommy Douglas and Ernest Manning and Stanley Knowles and J.S. Woodsworth and Edgerton Ryerson and Bob McClure. Do you recognize any of those names from a bygone era? Legendary men, like my friend Bob Galston, a legendary churchman, to be sure. Male spirituality doesn't really appear until there are alternatives to the common understanding, alternatives to the understanding of a previous generation. In other words, male spirituality becomes a topic only in response to something else. And for the most part, it becomes a topic in response to feminism. Many men, perhaps most, when this change began to emerge, simply left the church behind when the old era, my dad's era, the men's era, came to an end. But a generation ago, a popular male spirituality reemerged. This time it wasn't of the church, it was secular and psycho-spiritual, the so-called Iron John movement, named after the book by Robert Bly, best-selling book, and it spawned many other people writing on the subject. Bly thought that modern men needed to reassert what he called their primitive masculinity, which feminism was asking us to suppress. Using Jungian archetypes as a model, Bly thought that we needed to drum and to yell and to escape to become more rounded and contemporary modern men. For a generation that had left the church and were beginning to forget the church, this scratched an itch that many men didn't even realize they had. The response or the reaction to feminism from the conservative, often evangelical side of the church, which emerged about the same time as the Iron John movement, was to reassert male authority in the face of transformational change. The best way to make reference to this is to call to your attention the Promise Keepers, a movement founded not a long time ago, in 1990, by University of Colorado football coach Bill McCartney. By claiming that Christianity, especially for men, had nothing to learn from feminism, and denying that there was anything yet new to be discovered about human sexuality, Promise Keepers scratched the itch of conservative men who were feeling that modernity was taking away their sense of meaning. Now, while there is nothing in Promise Keepers that personally, as a Christian man, I would identify with. Let me say that asking for men to be responsible to their families, to be accountable for alcohol and substance abuse, and as a measure against domestic violence, Promise Keepers at least offered a form of male spirituality that was in some ways preferable to the emptiness of materialism and ignoring spirituality altogether. Now, a few years ago, almost by accident, I came across the work of Richard Rohr. Richard Rohr is an American Franciscan priest who has written and studied extensively on the subject of male spirituality. Rohr scratches my spiritual itch, and that's why you're about to hear of him this evening. In part because it comes from a balanced and robust Christianity, and partly because it seems that he has the answers to the questions that I have. He has helped me make sense of all the change we find going on around us and what a healthy male spirituality might look like. Without going into too much detail, I need to mention Rohr's understanding of the two halves of life. In the first half of life, we are driven by ego. That part of ourselves that says, this is how I am different. This is how I am special. This is how I am unique. This is why there is only one of me in all the universe. In the second half of life, we have the opportunity to be driven not by the ego, but by the soul. The soul is the part of ourselves that says, this is how I am the same. And this is what I have in common with others. And this is what I can share, especially with those younger than me. The first half of life, if you will, is gathering in. And it's necessary. The second half of life is giving it all away. The first half of life is dominated by either or thinking, either this must be right or that must be right. While the second half of life is dominated by both and thinking, why can't both of these things be right? Spirituality then becomes the development of wisdom and the overcoming of fear that allows us to move from the first half of life into the second half of life. Because the first half of life comes first, it's right there in its name, and because the first half of life, we all remember, is very seductive and awfully fun, it usually takes a crisis, a figuratively midlife crisis. Doesn't matter what age that happens at, but figuratively a midlife crisis, to prompt men to find the courage to move into the second half of life. That crisis can be many things, right? It can be the death of a loved one or a debilitating illness or a heart attack or unexpected unemployment or divorce or a fractured relationship or profound disappointment. It is also necessary to have developed a desire for spiritual well-being and a willingness to make that move into that wise and comfortable both and thinking second half of life. In other words, bring back to where I began, if we don't do the work, if we think that it just happens because once a month we get away with the guys, if we don't do the work of preparing ourselves and desiring to be spiritually rich individuals, that crisis will lead us to try and live the first half of our life all over again. It will drive us back to the beginning. Okay, that's a lot, right? There's a lot there. So let's take a break and talk about Donald Trump. He's always good for a laugh. At least let's talk about Donald Trump as a case study in the two halves of life. Among his many failings is that Trump is spiritually immature. He's always ego-driven. He's always thinking either or. And consequently, he is almost entirely without compassion for those who are any less than he is. To a degree, other attempts at male spirituality suffer the same fault. Man cave dwellers and Iron John followers and promise keepers all suffer from the same malady. They want to grow in spirit, but they also want to keep all the best things of the first half of life. The control, the power, the specialness, the uniqueness. We are living in a strange time, men, in 2018. The Me Too movement was catalyzed in the United States by accusations against Harvey Weinstein. If even a fraction of the accusations against him are true, then he is a criminal, and the only place that he should rightly make amends is in prison. Other criminal activity needs to be called out as such and similarly prosecuted. But many stories that are hashtagged Me Too, I believe, are quite complex. And I think that men are being silenced in the movement. And you know that there couldn't be a talk titled this without one controversial paragraph. And here it is, so that you're ready for it. I kind of think Gian Gomeshi got a raw deal. Ooh. Harvey Weinstein in the United States, but the story that catalyzed the movement in Canada was that of Gian Gomeshi, former host of Q on CBC Radio. When it became apparent that he was going to be fired for his personal sexual behavior and his workplace behavior as well, Gomeshi released a long account from his perspective on Facebook the night before it broke in the news, an attempt to get ahead of the story and save himself. Maybe some of you remember that. He said in that Facebook post that he liked to have rough sex. You should just know that. And so did his partners. And while it may not be everyone's cup of tea, it was his personal freedom being expressed. If Gian Gomeshi needs violence in his intimacy, he has more problems than simply being stuck in the first half of life. But I'm not his psychiatrist. Here's the odd thing. It went to court as more stories came out. And those stories were told and those women were heard. But there was insufficient evidence and Gomeshi was acquitted. The Me Too movement was outraged, called this unjust, called this unfair, called this a symptom of all the evil that exists against women in the world. And I don't have it all figured out, but I'm not so sure. Without defending or excusing the behavior of Gian Gomeshi in the least, let's acknowledge at least that in this case study, the Me Too movement has power, and it is exercising that power. Gomeshi lost his job. He lost his reputation. He lost the value of his brand upon which future earnings would most certainly be based. He has no prospects for employment, and I'm sure his personal life is all but ruined. Yes, he didn't go to jail, but does that mean he didn't get what he deserved? And maybe more? It may not be for men to say how, but the Me Too movement is going to have to find a way to include men in the conversation. And men will need to enter that conversation first by listening, That is our first obligation, our first moral obligation. Just this week, we were reminded of that in the worst of all possible ways, the Waffle House shooting in Tennessee, the pedestrian attack in Toronto on Monday remind us that there are men out there who are blaming women for their unhappiness and justifying violence against them instead of doing the work to develop a mature and healthy spirituality. Spiritually mature men, which we aspire to be, wise men, soulful men, men capable of both and thinking, are needed, are necessary for this conversation. Men who recognize and will acknowledge and say to other men, actually, feminism has been a remarkable blessing to us. That the shift in gender roles in the last two generations have been a source of remarkable blessing. This is especially true, I suggest, that almost all of you will recognize in the opportunity to be much more fully engaged in the lives of our children. Why would I ever trade the opportunity the new way has provided for me to be a father? I wouldn't trade it for anything. And when it is our turn to talk, let's make no mistake and admit, change is coming. And actually, we see it all around us. Just last month, I was in the Skyway on the second floor of the Bell MTS Center, you know, when you got to go around from the back to the front. And as I turned the corner, I saw a poster that I had never seen before, hadn't seen an ad for it, and it drew my attention right away. The title on the poster read, Pride Tape Auction. And the photo was a picture of Jets assistant captain Mark Scheifele. And he was holding a hockey stick, blade side up, and that blade was taped in the rainbow colors of the gay pride flag. The auction, as I understand, is intended to raise money and awareness by the Winnipeg Jets for the Pride Initiative. The NHL and the Winnipeg Jets and all those understandings of what it is to be a man that was from a different era are actively working to make life better for those they formerly ignored, if not persecuted. It was a miraculous poster, and it made me think maybe the second half of life is not that far off for many of us after all. Thank you very much for this great privilege.